Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Feels good to be back. This is it. We're right in the middle of things again.
Yes, back to regular episodes. We're about three or four nights into the NBA season. You know, we're going to talk storylines today. As always, you want to check out the preview pods, all the pods we did over the summer, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Corey, let's get right into it. We're going to talk storylines. What's the biggest storyline for the Toronto Raptors this season?
It's got to be Kawhi Leonard. It's everything to do with the 2019 free agency around Kawhi Leonard. Will he stay or will he leave? And through two games, it looks like it may be really hard for Kawhi to leave Toronto. You know, they beat Boston last night. I mean, it wasn't like it was a blowout, but it really felt like that Raptors team was in control of a lot of it. Obviously, Kyrie and Gordon Hayward aren't back to full strength, but I think the storyline for them has got to be Kawhi Leonard. Will he stay or will he go?
Yeah, I think that's a big storyline, obviously, the offseason. And also, I think, you know, what level are we going to see from Kawhi this season? I think that's a storyline. Like you said, you know, the first two games averaging 27 a game, over 11 rebounds, over two assists. You know, the shooting numbers aren't great. Three looks pretty good. And he looks like he's getting some of that rust off. I saw him miss a couple of layups yesterday. But I think, you know, Kawhi getting to that full MVP level, and that'll kind of decide, you know, how far can the Raptors go? Are they going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, or are they possibly going to get to the finals and beat a team like Boston? I think there's a lot of excitement with Kawhi being there. I don't know if you saw like the preview video that the Raptors dropped before the season. Like, that was pretty entertaining and kind of sent a message to the team and I think the fan base.
Yeah, I saw the video on Twitter before. I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet, but I'm going to be checking that out soon.
Yeah, definitely check it out. They're just like straight hardcore and straight facts, you know, getting rid of DeRozan, Casey, bringing in Kawhi and having a real shot at the championship is, you know, the main message. Moving on to Philly, what's the storyline for the Sixers?
I mean, for me, it's what is Markelle Fultz? Is he a bench player or is he a star? Obviously, he's starting right now. Personally, I don't think that team is in trouble with perimeter shooting in general, but I think Markelle Fultz in the starting lineup is a poor decision. There's just not a lot of floor spacing when Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons are on the floor together. So for me, the storyline is, can Markelle Fultz be an efficient player? I know that I had him picked as my most improved player of the year, and that pick's not looking too good through two games.
Yeah, Fultz, I hate that we have like pretty similar storylines for the same thing. And what I have is just, what will the Sixers get from Fultz? You know, like you said, they're starting him. I don't like the pair with Ben Simmons as well. I think Fultz maybe would be better off with a second unit. I think, you know, Brett Brown's trying to give him some more confidence. But spacing-wise, like you said, having JJ out there makes more sense. And the whole situation where they're starting Fultz in the beginning of the game and then to start the third quarter, they're starting JJ Redick. It's just very weird. And I think for Fultz, like, he still looks scared to shoot. I know he knocked down a three in that blowout against the Bulls, but like, he's very timid at attempting a shot. And I think they need to see him shoot threes just to keep the defense honest.
Yeah, I agree. I just think, you know, I know you're a big guy on spacing, and JJ Redick just makes sense. I don't understand, like you said, they start the game off with Fultz, but then to start the second half, you bring in Redick. It's a weird rotation that Brett Brown is running right now.
Yeah, I want to say Jay Christian tweeted out, you know, the Sixers are going to trade for, or maybe that was the Lakers are going to trade for Kyle Korver. But I think, you know, the Sixers probably should be interested too, just getting another floor spacer out there. Somebody can knock down the shot. And then, you know, obviously I think Dario Saric hasn't been great from three so far this season. He could also pick it up, but something to keep an eye on. For the New York Knicks storyline.
This one was tough. For me, it's... it's how much growth can we see from the young guys? You know, Frank Ntilikina, Kevin Knox, even Trey Burke. This team is a really young team. Obviously, we don't know. I mean, Porzingis is also kind of like the giant what if. Like, is he going to come back later on in the season? Is he going to sit out the entire season? But for me, because Porzingis is not in the picture right now, the storyline is, are any of these young guys a part of the future going forward?
Yeah, I'll say I was at the Nets and Knicks game last night. Kevin Knox looks great. Like, as soon as he gets confident and more comfortable in the NBA, he's going to be a real problem. He looks super smooth and pulling up from his jump shot. Like, he's a guarantee I think will be in the Knicks' future. For me, I think the storyline is, will Porzingis return? Will he come back this season? Will he sit out the whole year? When he comes back, will the Knicks be anywhere close to the playoffs? I think that's, you know, what they're really looking at. But I like the storyline you picked too, the young guys. You know, how much are we going to see from Frank? How much growth is he really going to make this season? Also, like a guy like Tim Hardaway Jr., is he going to live up to that contract? He's, you know, he's been dropping buckets. You know, his shooting percentages haven't been great, but he's been putting up the points. And obviously, David Fizdale is going to really make this team work. So, I mean, for the Knicks, it's, even though they're not going to be a great team, there's still a lot of excitement around them.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun right now to have two New York teams that are both, you know, more or less on the rise with their young cores.
Talking about the other New York team, the Brooklyn Nets, my squad, what do you got for them?
My storyline for them is, are D'Lo and Caris LeVert the backcourt of the future? Obviously, Caris LeVert through two games has balled out. Last night he had a game winner. I think D'Lo has been solid. Obviously, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been doing anything as great compared to Caris LeVert. But this could be a really intriguing backcourt going forward because I feel like they've really complemented each other well. D'Lo is kind of more of a scoring guard, and LeVert has shown that he can play make. He can pretty much do it all. Let's be honest here. So for me, it's if this backcourt is the future.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty similar on that. It's can the Nets young core make that stride this season? I'm looking at Caris LeVert, D'Angelo Russell, Jared Allen, like you said. You know, D'Lo's been a little bit slow to get off, but he's done some good things. Defensively, he's improved a little bit, keeping his pace down, not as many turnovers, you know, early on, not as many dumb plays or bad shots. Caris, you know, he's been great, like you said, averaging over 27 a game, 5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. He's been improved defensively too. And you know, Caris has been my guy since he was drafted as a rookie for the Nets. So I'm really high and I'm happy to see him really hit that next level. And Jared Allen has been great. Like, he's going to be a guy that's a problem in the paint offensively. He's already knocked down a couple threes. He just looks a lot more confident, a lot more patient in the paint, you know, not rushing shots and whatnot. So I'm really excited. And it looks like that young core could make a major stride this season. Like you said, for New York basketball, both those teams being good, there was a lot of energy in Barclays last night. Just like to see that going forward.
Yeah, love Jared Allen. I love the fro.
I know the Nets are very excited. You know, the fan base is very excited to be interested in what he can do because he's such a young player. Now on to Boston.
For me, the storyline for them is the real storyline is how far can this team go? Obviously, Hayward and Kyrie Irving are back. We know they have crazy depth. We saw it in the first game against Philly. Brad Stevens spoke afterwards saying it was kind of hard figuring out who to give minutes to, but the one good benefit he had is when guys got tired, he could just put somebody else in with fresh legs because he has so many options. So for me, it's how far can this Boston team go? Because right now, by roster, I still think this is the team that has the best chance of competing with the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, that's a great one. And you kind of mentioned my storyline in there. How will Brad Stevens manage the minutes? You know, right now it doesn't matter as much because you got Gordon Hayward on a minute restriction. And, you know, it's early in the season. Guys aren't really fresh leg-wise, including Kyrie. Now, when things start to pick up and, you know, Kyrie's dropping 30 and 10 assists in a game or something like that, are you going to really want to put him on the bench and bring in Terry Rozier, who's been great as well? I think there'll be questions that kind of come up. Also, like Jason Tatum, he's been amazing to start the season. Then you have Hayward trying to get him back in rhythm. Do you want to take minutes away from other guys? So I think managing the rotation is going to be a big storyline. And like you said, you know, the other big storyline, and this is probably more of a general NBA storyline, is can Boston beat Golden State in a 7-game series and actually give us a competitive finals?
I sure hope so.
I think a lot of us do. Now, moving on to the Central Division, Milwaukee Bucks.
For me, the storyline is, can Antetokounmpo lead this team to a home court advantage and win MVP in the same season? That's my storyline. Obviously, I got to watch him last night against the Indiana Pacers. And with the new floor spacing that Milwaukee team is running with Budenholzer's system, they look really tough, especially when the shots are falling. Antetokounmpo, an open floor with spacing, is freaking terrifying. He was splitting double teams. He was running through defenders, kicking it out to wide open 3-point shooters. For me, it's how far this Bucks team can go and can Giannis win the MVP.
I like that. I'm going to go with the coaching. How much better can Bud make this team? And, you know, last year, I think the Bucks finished 27 3-pointers made. This year, two games in, they're already third in the league. Obviously, it's small sample size, but I think you can see, you know, the emphasis on shooting more threes right away from Coach Bud, and I think that's really going to help the Bucks improve, especially, like you mentioned, Antetokounmpo just getting in the paint, causing a ton of problems, going to lead to a lot of open shooters on the outside.
Yeah, I saw that the hard way last night.
Well, talking Pacers, what storyline you got for them?
Who's going to be the number two option on this team? Obviously, Victor Oladipo is the star, the mini LeBron. Who the number two is behind him on this roster, it's still really hard to tell. You know, everyone is rooting and hoping it's Miles Turner. I'm getting pushed farther and farther away from Miles Turner and more towards Domantas Sabonis. He just looks better, and obviously he comes off the bench. But in my eyes, he may be the second-best player on this Pacers team. But going forward, it's going to be who is the second-best guy on this team.
Yeah, kind of related again here, Corey, with the storylines, which is terrible. No,
we should have rehearsed beforehand, I guess, right?
Mine is, will Miles Turner take that next step? You know, he just signed the big contract. Is he going to be that guy? I know the Pacers want him to be that guy. And before Oladipo popped off, everyone thought this was going to be Turner's team. And, you know, so far to start the season, he hasn't been amazing. And I think the Pacers and probably the Pacer fans are hoping for a little bit more.
Yeah, he definitely looks more confident out there. In game one, he had a lot of dumb fouls. And then just last night, the offense just runs more fluently when you have Domantas Sabonis out there. And Sabonis also just works a little bit harder on the boards. Obviously, he's not the same rim protector that Turner is. But I don't. There's just something missing from Turner still. And I'm not sure, you know, how far away it is that he gets it or if he'll ever get it.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we're going to keep an eye on all season. Now moving to Cleveland, obviously no LeBron. What's, you know, big over there?
Will they blow it up?
I like that one.
I think that's my storyline, especially after the first two games. You mentioned this off air. I hadn't known Kevin Love's shooting numbers, but he's shooting god-awful through two games. We mentioned this on the preview series that we weren't sure if he could be the number one option again for a team. The Cavaliers sure are trying to make him the number one option again, but it just doesn't seem to be working. The supporting cast around him isn't great. And Tristan Thompson has a really big mouth still. I don't understand why he's doing so much talking for the roster they have put together. But for me, it's will they blow it up? Because I think a lot of guys on this team, you know, like a Kyle Korver, who you mentioned earlier, he could be moved, a J.R. Smith, even maybe a George Hill. I think a lot of these guys could be better used elsewhere.
Yeah, pretty similar again. You know, what will we see from Kevin Love? Can he be that number one option? Is he going to be a guy that kind of just gets hurt and then doesn't carry the team? Or is he going to get moved? And then, like you said, the shooting hasn't been great. Obviously, very small sample size, still getting in rhythm early in the season. But I think that's what I'm really looking at. And I think that'll determine if, you know, the Cavs think they can compete for a playoff spot or if it really just makes more sense to blow it up and trade him out of here. But if he doesn't play well, it's also going to be a lot harder to trade that contract.
That too. Agreed.
Now for the Chicago Bulls.
I have two for this one, but I'll say one. Will this team play any defense?
That's what I have.
I mean, they just – offensively, they don't look terrible, although there is still way too much Zach LaVine dribbling. I know I saw a clip on Twitter last night or the night before, and he dribbled the ball for, I don't know, 20 seconds and then put up an awful jump shot that didn't even hit the rim. But for me, it's will they play any defense, because the offense certainly can score points, but it just doesn't look like anyone has any interest on playing on that one end of the floor.
Yeah, I think same thing over here. I think the Bulls defense is going to be the concern. Obviously, a young team too, a lot of guys known for scoring. We heard the Jabari Parker quotes all summer long. They didn't bring me here to play defense. So, you know, it's – and they let up 127 to the Sixers in their first game of the season, in a game that they started really hot and then they just cooled completely off. What about Detroit?
For Detroit, it did – can they stay healthy? That's Detroit's. Reggie Jackson has dealt with a lot of knee tendonitis the last several years. The Pistons are a lot better when he is healthy and on the floor than when he's not. Having a point guard is pretty crucial in the NBA, believe it or not. And also Blake Griffin, another guy who has had several numerous injuries when it comes to the lower half of his body. Can he stay healthy? They went out and they got Blake Griffin last year because they wanted to add another star. They wanted to have a nice big pairing between Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. For me, it's health.
Yeah, I love the health one because that's obviously going to be huge for them, you know, who stays healthy. I also think, can Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin kind of work in the small ball era? You know, Blake's obviously a little bit more versatile, but pulling them all out on screens, you know, seeing how they could work. We saw them in one game against the Nets, but the Nets were pretty shorthanded in that game. It's kind of like, will this small ball line, this big lineup work against small ball? So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Or will they be able to kind of dominate them? You know, you never know. It could go either way. On to our next division, though, Charlotte Hornets. Southeast Division.
For me, it's what happens with Kemba Walker. Obviously, through two games, Kemba Walker has balled out. He had 41 points Yeah, he had 41 points in game one in a loss where they nearly came back and defeated the Milwaukee Bucks, who were out to a big lead at halftime. The Hornets fought back in that. And then last night, they blew out the Orlando Magic for their 12th straight win against the Orlando Magic.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. The Magic have lost 12 straight for the Hornets. Stay away. So for me, it's what will happen to Kemba Walker. Does he end up staying here long term? Obviously, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. You know, they're 1-1. It's early. We don't know how this team's going to play out throughout the entire season. But what is Kemba Walker's future?
Yeah, I love that. You know, Kemba is going to be a guy who is a free agent in the offseason, and there's going to be trade rumors all season, probably along with him. For me, it's will Malik Monk be unleashed? And so far, it looks like he's averaging 28 a game through two games, you know, 14 points, getting some shots up. And I think that's a young piece for them moving forward, because if they do lose Kemba, at least they have some young talent in him and Miles Bridges.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Clifford just didn't want to play him last year, and I still don't understand why.
Yeah, and it looks like he could have helped. Obviously, I think he dealt with injuries last year, and the defense wasn't great. But seeing him on the court, obviously, there is a lot of talent there. What about the Washington Wizards?
Can this team keep it together? And what I mean by that is we know this team can be kind of a circus, both on and off the floor. You know, John Wall and Gortat had beef in the past. Wall and Beal have had beef in the past. They brought in Dwight Howard, who has been a cancer on numerous teams the last several years. So can this team keep it together? Because on paper, I think this team can be a top team in the East. You know, some, as we mentioned on the preview series and everything else, somewhere between, you know, the 4 and 6 range. You know, but can they keep it together?
Yeah, same thing over here. Locker room, you know, chemistry. How are they going to gel? There's already been talk about John Wall not getting the ball to Otto Porter enough. You know, is there going to be enough chemistry on that team? Are they going to make a trade, or is someone going to ask for a trade? You know, maybe Bradley Beal gets unhappy. Maybe John Wall's unhappy. I don't know. I think that's going to be a big storyline, because we know they're a talented team, just all about gelling together. Miami Heat, though.
I think the storyline has got to be just Dwayne Wade's final season. You know, even though they have some nice young pieces and Josh Richardson, who's been playing pretty well.
I like him.
I like, Abadayo.
Yeah. Close enough. Bam Abadayo. Yeah.
Okay. Close enough.
they don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They have some nice pieces. Obviously they're a tough team, a gritty team by Eric Spoelstra, but for them, it's one last dance. It's his final season. So I think he's got to be the storyline.
Yeah, that's obviously big. Anytime a Hall of Famer is having his last season, how much he contribute to this team. For me, though, the Heat, it's can they improve on last season? Can they be better? They're going to be worse. You know, what can we really expect? So far, through two games, looks like they've had a really grind for victories. I think they lost on a game-winning shot against Orlando in game one, and in game two against Washington, Kelly Olynyk got a tip in at the end. So it's like, are they going to really have to grind out games the entire season? You know, can they really hold up? And obviously, health is always a concern because they dealt with a ton of injuries the last two seasons. Now, Orlando Magic, who we already mentioned, what are your thoughts on them?
What is the direction? What are we doing? That's my storyline. Where are we going? This is now, what, year 6 or year 7 of us not having any clue what this team is trying to do?
700? No.
Yeah. Again, last night, and they're celebrating their 30th year, I believe, in the NBA, along with the Hornets. But what are we doing? I watched that team the other night because it was the first game on, the Hornets and the Magic. And this team, with a minute left in the first quarter, had 8 points, Nick. They had 8 points with a minute left in the first quarter. There is no point guard. There is nobody who can go out and get you a bucket. Aaron Gordon settles for a ton of threes, and they don't go in. I just need to know what we're doing here. Are we going to see someone get dealt? They fired Frank Vogel and brought in Steve Clifford. And through two games, it hasn't looked like he's made any difference to this roster. I just want to know what's going on in Orlando. That's my storyline.
Yeah, I think I'm more concerned with, like you said, more of the roster, what the direction is. You know, obviously bringing in Mo Bamba, you know, having Jonathan Isaac, you know, Aaron Gordon. Now it's trying to get some more talent in that guard and wing position a little bit, especially more young guys that fit the timeline. For me, though, it's just like point guard. You know, you have these young bigs that are very talented. You need someone to get them the ball in a good situation, especially to help build up their confidence when they're very young. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Are they going to stick with what they have with a DJ Augustine? Or are they going to go out and make a move and get somebody a little bit better?
I'll say it again. They should have gone hard press on Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that if they wanted to do that. Or I would have even been okay with somebody, a lesser player, or even make a stronger move for somebody like a Terry Rozier. you know, a younger point guard that fits their timeline, can grow with some of these young guys, you know, just to kind of fit in there and help them develop a little bit faster. But we'll see what happens with the Magic. Like you said, it's been pretty bad over there for a while. Hopefully they can kind of push things in the right direction and have a solid direction to go in. Now, talking about your favorite squad, the Atlanta Hawks.
I think my storyline is, can this team win over 20 games? Obviously, but in the preview series, I pegged them to win 19. Through two games, it looks like they may not even get 15. So that's my storyline. But the underlying storyline of, is Trae Young the actual point guard for the future?
It's a good one. That's what I got. I said, Trae Young, real or fake? Is he going to be a boom or is he going to be a bust? I think, you know, he's going to have a lot on his plate this season. And like you said, you know, the Hawks, I think they allowed the Knicks to score 49 points in the second quarter of their first game of the season. And the Knicks aren't a talented bunch, especially without Porzingis. So far, it hasn't looked great for the Hawks. We know they're going to be bad. The real question is, how bad are they going to be and what can we expect from Trae Young? Anything else on the East storyline wise?
No, I think that pretty much nails it. I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would mention too is just, you know, we'll be watching Boston and Toronto and how they match up all season long. It seems like the other teams might be a step behind them if everything kind of gels right for those two squads, and there's just a lot of talent. And we saw their first game, you know, last night against each other, and that was really a great matchup. I caught some of the condensed version before the show. But moving on to the West, starting with the Utah Jazz.
Tough. My storyline for them is, can their defense carry them to a home court advantage in the playoffs again? Obviously last night they put on a thriller against the Golden State Warriors, only to get beat by ex-Utah Jazz player last year, Jonas Jerebko, off a tip-in. I watched the first half of the game before I fell asleep, but that Utah Jazz team just plays really tough, gritty defense. I'm a little concerned on Donovan Mitchell's efficiency to start this year. He's taking a lot of shots, but their defense is just such big time. It keeps him in the game.
Yeah, I think part of that would be, you know, last year they went on that crazy run when Gobert came back, and then before that they weren't really good. So it's like, where are they at? Are they really that exciting team we saw during that, you know, great stretch, or are they closer to somewhere in between? And then, like you said, Donovan Mitchell, I think, how much better will he be this season? Can he kind of find a balance of taking too many shots and getting his teammates involved? You know, what's going to be the gel there? Denver Nuggets.
Can this team finally get over the hump? Is my storyline. The last couple of years, they've been just on the brink of a playoff spot, and they just missed out. Obviously, last year, they lost in the last game of the season in that overtime thriller against the Minnesota Timberwolves. There's been a lot of praise this year about Nikolai Jokic and how he is, you know, an obviously complete center, and that they want to run the team through him. Paul Millsap is healthy, but can this team take that next step to be a playoff team?
Yeah, part of that will be playing defense, and that's my storyline. Will they improve defensively and be, you know, a better two-way team? Obviously, offense is always going to be the better aspect for them, considering the talent and, you know, the players on their roster, but they do need to improve defensively. How much will they improve? And that'll kind of determine how far they'll go in the playoff seeding and in the playoffs.
Yeah.
OKC.
Man, can this team function without – how do I word this again without sounding like a dickhead? How can this team win games without efficient scores? Even again through two games, Paul George has been shooting terribly again this season to start. It's concerning. Westbrook obviously isn't healthy, so maybe when he comes back, things will change. Dennis Schroeder has been extremely inefficient. This team is just full of inefficient scores, despite how their defense may be above average. It just looks like their offense is going to be a complete, you know, shit show again.
Yeah, offense is definitely a concern. Like you said, injuries. That's what I'm looking at. How will the injuries impact OKC this season? Already Westbrook not there for the first two games. And obviously that was felt. And that probably hurt the efficiency too a little bit, not having your go-to score. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Now, Portland Trailblazers.
How far can Lillard and McCollum continue to carry this team? Obviously, game one against the Los Angeles Lakers, McCollum and Lillard combined for 41 points. I remember watching the condensed version the next morning after only watching the first half before I went to bed again, and just thinking, like, you know, these two guys, when they're both going off, they're really tough to beat. However, if one of these guys doesn't play at their best, there's just not another option for points. So how far can this team go with a team led strictly by its backcourt?
I'm surprised you didn't mention your favorite name in the NBA, Nick Stauskas, because he caught fire in that game. But for
it's
me,
16, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know his exact number, but I know he was just like scorching, and the people were just like going in on him. But Zach Collins, you know, how much of a stride can he take? Obviously, lost Ed Davis. They need someone to step up in that big position. You know, Nurkic really didn't cut it in the playoffs. Zach Collins looks like he's a little bit more athletic, a little bit better defensively. He looked good in that game one against the Lakers. So I'm really interested to see how much Collins can kind of improve this year. Minnesota Timberwolves.
The storyline for me here is what's going to happen? I guess that's as simple as I can put it. What's going to happen? Is Jimmy Butler going to stay on this team throughout the season? Will he be dealt to the deadline? Will Thibodeau make it through this season? Will he be fired? Will Karl-Anthony Towns become more assertive offensively after being fifth in usage, fifth in points, and fifth in shots so far through two games on this Minnesota Timberwolves roster? For me, it's just where are we going again?
Yeah, there's a lot of – you could pick plenty of storylines. I think
there's a lot for this team.
Yeah, the main one, though, obviously, is Jimmy Butler. You know, it's super – the whole situation is really strange. He's playing for the team. He's playing really well. Fans were booing him last night, then MVP chanting for him and later in the game. So that whole situation, how that kind of pans out, like you said, does he stay there all year? Do they trade him? Or what do they get back in that trade? I think Jimmy Butler is kind of the first key to what happens in Minnesota. Now on to Los Angeles Clippers.
You want to go first on this one? Because I don't have a good storyline for this team.
I think for me, it's is Tobias Harris a star? You know, is he going to be able to be that, you know, leading scorer? Is he going to be up to maybe, you know, around that all-star level? What type of money is he going to get in free agency? Is he going to be a guy that you keep with this team? Or is he a guy that you let go in free agency and kind of focus on some of the other names out there?
I think that would be the storyline I pick as well. But just from you saying that, I think my storyline would be, can this team do enough this season to attract a marquee free agent? Obviously, there's been a lot of ties to Kawhi Leonard, possibly. So for me, it's if they can attract another marquee player.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, it's going to come with how they play the season, especially for the pieces that are locked up for the future, which aren't many. Now, on to the other team in L.A., the Lakers. Now, there is probably 100 different storylines. What's your favorite one?
I mean, my favorite one is the simple one. Can LeBron James lead this team to a playoff spot? Because I don't even think that we can say for sure this is a playoff team, because their three-point shooting looks dreadful through one game so far. Damn, it feels like I've already watched a lot of LeBron. So
like
the storyline
highlights like every 2 seconds, even though he only played one game.
Yeah. How far can LeBron carry this team, and will he be able to carry this team enough to possibly put his name again in the MVP conversation?
Yeah, I think LeBron obviously is the biggest storyline usually in the NBA. How far can he take this team? How much better can he make these players? And like you said, shooting. Are these young guys going to knock down their shots? Is there going to be spacing on the floor? We know they can get to the rim. We know they can pass the ball. But in the NBA nowadays, you need to be able to shoot threes. And in the first half of that game, you know, they picked it up a little bit in the fourth quarter. They did not knock down anything. So that's something I'll keep an eye on all year long. Phoenix.
I mean, I can say first off, I didn't know Devin Booker was playing in game one until the next morning. So that took me for a loop. For me, it's can Ayton and Booker be the cornerstone pieces going forward that turns Phoenix into a playoff team? Through their first game, they looked really good in Ariza. I wasn't expecting to see this Ariza, but for me, it's just, is this team actually ready to compete?
Yeah, exactly. That's actually exactly what I have. I said, can the Suns be competitive this year? So far, Devin Booker's going to drop, you know, 30-plus a game. They're going to look great, and they're going to be in a lot of games. But obviously, we'll like to see them against some better opponents. Sacramento Kings, always a fun storyline team.
Sacramento Kings, it's again, just for me, it's what's the direction? Obviously, we know they have a logjam of big men. Harry Giles is playing this year, and he looks pretty good, actually. But it's who stays and who goes for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to what you said on the Orlando one. You know, what's the direction of this team? What young pieces are keeping going forward? What's going to be the style of play they're looking to do? You know, who's going to be that key cog that kind of is their lead guy? I think there's already been talk about, like, they can't find minutes for Marvin Bagley. Like, why would you draft him if you're not going to find minutes for, you know, a number two overall pick? It's just a very strange situation over there already. Golden State, though.
Golden State, it's can they do it again? I think that's the simple storyline. Can they do it again? Obviously, they've won back-to-back titles 3 and 4 years, or is it 4 and 5 years now?
Three and 4 years. Yeah, it'll be 4 and 5 years by the end of 2019.
Yeah. So the storyline for me is just can they remain hungry enough to do it, to do the three-peat?
Yeah, I'm not even really as concerned with what they'll do in the postseason. I'm just saying regular season-wise, will they have the drive to really compete and get a high seed? Are they going to kind of take nights off? Obviously, when DeCousins come back, they'll be super deep. I think when the playoffs come back on, they'll turn their juice up. Maybe they won't turn up all the way up. But in the West, it just doesn't seem like there's a team that's really going to knock them out. It doesn't look like Houston's going to be better than last year. So I'm pretty confident in what Golden State will do in the postseason. It's more so regular season-wise. Will they show up every night, which is a question mark when you won so many championships in the last 4 years, like you said. Talking Houston, what do you got for them?
Can this team play enough defense to replicate what they did last season? They got blown out against the Pelicans in game one. Melo looked pitiful on both ends of the floor. For me, it's if can they get enough defense? I think the offense will get better, but I'm really concerned about their defense.
Yeah, that's definitely a real concern. I think it's just like, can the new pieces gel? Can they pick up their roles, do the dirty work? You know, in that game against the Pelicans, they looked kind of lazy. You know, defensively, passing-wise, turnovers, just a lot of plays that were just honestly stupid. So I think, you know, getting everything together and playing hard, and especially after working so hard last season, trying to get back to that point is going to take even more work this season. Now into another team in Texas, San Antonio.
Can they survive with two stars who focus on mid-range jumpers is my storyline. I just don't know if it works. And the injury to Murray obviously hurt, but I don't know if this team, how far can they go with two stars who rely heavily on non-traditional NBA style of play now?
Yeah, mine's can Pop work some more magic, which I think that he will be able to. I think it's easy to forget when you talk about the Spurs so much in the offseason, you forget how well they are as a machine, just passing the ball, running their system and whatnot. So I'm still pretty high on them, but I think it's going to be very hard in the West still to make the playoffs. Now, Dallas.
For me, it's simple. Is Luka Doncic the hype? Or yeah. is the hype around Luka Doncic justified? And that's simple. That's simple enough for me. I think he looked decent in game one against the Phoenix Suns. Obviously I got to see more, but I just want to know if the hype is real.
Yeah. And I think also for some of the perspective is too, is like, will Luka hit that high level that a lot of people are expecting this season, or is something we'll see farther down the line or not see at all? So Luka, obviously anytime you have that much draft hype coming in, I think that's going to be, you know, the thing to focus on in Dallas. Now the Memphis Grizzlies.
Memphis Grizzlies, for me, the storyline is, again, will this team blow it up? Obviously, their expectations coming into the season were to win 50 games. They got blown out by the Pacers by 30 in night one. I think they did come back and end up winning, I think, by double digits their last game. Marcus Gasol is up there in age. He's already got a nagging lower back injury or something. Connolly hasn't looked great. Obviously, he's coming back from an Achilles injury. This is just another team where I think they might end up blowing it up halfway through the year.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much asking the question that you just asked in a different way is, are the Grizzlies good enough to compete for the playoffs, or are they just going to blow it up and be a team that kind of trades it away and starts that rebuild? So I think that's something to keep an eye on as well. Pelicans.
Can this let me find the right words, because all I have is Pelicans are good on my Can the Pelicans be a serious threat out West is my storyline. Julius Randle has been hitting threes to start off this season. In, you know, like 25 minutes off the bench. Nikolai Mirotic has been fantastic. I mean, this team scored, Mick, a ridiculous 149 points last night. Yes, this is not 2K on a rookie in 12-minute quarters. This was a regular season game, and this team scored 149 points.
They're going to be a problem for a lot of different teams, just that trio of bigs and the style of play they have. You know, and my storyline was how much better can they be than last season? And I think, you know, obviously so far looking at it, it looks like they're going to be way better. And the more of the question is going to be like what you kind of reference. Can they be a top team in the West? I mean, Anthony Davis is out here dominating, and he feels like he still doesn't get the respect he deserves. Like, could this be a team that actually fights for home court and maybe is competing into a higher seed than we even thought, maybe up to that 3 or 2 seed?
I think this team definitely has the potential to, especially anytime you have a talent like Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday, even though he only had 11 points, I believe, last night. I don't know if you saw some of the defensive sequences he had in that game, but boy, oh boy. I don't care who you are, but if you do not enjoy good defense, I don't even want to hear from you, because stuff like that gets me so much more hyped than seeing someone score a bunch of points.
Yeah, I mean, Drew's definitely another guy. We had a big postseason. We're hoping he would kind of carry it over to the regular season. And so far, it looks like the Pelicans are the real deal. And just the pace, and like I said, the trio of bigs they have just provide so many problems. And Anthony Davis is a problem alone. Then you throw in Mirotić and a Julius Randle, who looks like he improved a lot this year too. It's just like, how good can they really be? And like, they're not a I think anytime this is similar to the East with Antetokounmpo, when you face the Pelicans in the playoffs, it's just you don't want to face Anthony Davis because he's the type of player that can just win you games by himself.
Yeah, and with that said, Alfred Payton, it looks like being around winners and talent, he looks decent so far, and I know we were all pretty skeptical about him coming into the season.
Yeah, he does, and I think, you know, having great bigs to play with are going to make your life a lot easier, especially when one of them's going to probably be an all-time great in Anthony Davis. Now, some more hot takes coming in. You know, obviously, like you said, we've only seen teams play 2 or 3 games so far. What players have really impressed you?
Somebody that really impressed me.
You can go one by one. We'll kind of break it down a little bit each way.
Okay. For me, first off, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, he got stronger this offseason. He's bigger. And obviously, he just looks better because the floor is more spaced out for him. But him in the open court, I've seen him take threes. I've seen him take longer pull-ups. He looks more confident shooting the jump shot. I mean, he's impressed me already, and I know he was my early pick for MVP, but he just looks like that kind of guy to me already.
Yeah, he looks like a monster. You know, like you said, I think Antetokounmpo is averaging like 16-plus rebounds a game. Obviously, it's only 2 games in, but he just seems to be having like a monster effect across the floor. And like I mentioned before, I think Bud's going to really help him out in spacing the floor and kind of put him in great opportunities. And I'm sure he's kind of pushing him to shoot more jump shots because he knows how much easier that's going to make his life. And then talking the other big MVP candidate, like I talked about, Anthony Davis. He's been getting double-teamed a lot, so what's he doing? He's just passing the ball well. I think he's averaging like 6 or 7 assists already. He's going to have some great numbers this year, and he's going to take another stride. And I honestly think, I know this is super early, but if I had to make a guess at it, I feel like Anthony Davis and Antetokounmpo is going to be the MVP conversation most of the year.
I agree. I think those two guys will be neck and neck throughout the year. I think LeBron James will be close, if not in the conversation as well. But like you mentioned, you know, through 2 games, he's averaging 28.5, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists. Those are freakish numbers for a guy at his position. Obviously, it looks like he's better. And if he's healthy, he's just unguardable. And anytime you're unguardable, you become an MVP candidate, I think.
Exactly. Now, going on to one of the guys that I just like, and this is a guy, like I said before, I've been very high on since he was a rookie, and that's Caris LeVert. You know, a lot of people are already picking him as maybe a possible most improved player award winner this year, and I think, honestly, the strength, the balance he's worked on, and just the aspects like you mentioned, he doesn't really have many flaws in his game. He can pass, he can score, he can rebound, he can play defense, so I'm really liking what he can bring to the Nets.
He looks like a stud. The confidence on him is overflowing. He looks like a guy who's ready to be, you know, the man of the team, if you will.
Yeah.
Maybe more so than D'Lo at this point in time.
And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because maybe D'Angelo's not that alpha, and maybe Caris is. Maybe he's that guy that can take over. And it seemed like he really wanted the ball. And from quotes I've seen, he told Kenny Atkinson after Game 1 in Detroit, where he turned over the ball at the end of the game, he wanted to make up for it, and he owed him one, and he did. He went out there and got the bucket and scored.
Well, there you go. You love to hear that, especially from a guy so young. The flex after he scored the game-winning bucket. Yeah, for sure, Caris LeVert has been impressive through 2 games. And Bill Simmons, come out. Face me. Say something on your bad take on Caris LeVert. I need answers.
And Caris is a guy that literally got a lot of shade throughout the offseason. People saying, oh, why wouldn't the Nets trade Caris LeVert for Jimmy Butler? And I think obviously it's only been two games, but you can clearly see why they wouldn't want to trade him. And then personality-wise, he's just a very nice guy, gets along with a lot of people. And you mentioned the flex. That's been something people have been asking for a little bit more. They're like, Caris, we know that you're super confident. We want you to show some more of that aggression. Last night I saw him talking a little bit with Tim Hardaway Jr. Obviously both played at Michigan, but it was nice to see them chirp a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure.
Who else you got?
For me, I'm going to go with a guy from my team, Domantas Sabonis. He's been impressive through two games. He's averaging 13 points and 14 rebounds through two games. He just looks like the best center on this roster. He looks way better. I don't want to say way better, but he looks better, more complete than Miles Turner at this point in time. He's just more versatile offensively, the pick and roll, the pick and pop. He's more aggressive on the boards. He just looks really good. He looks a lot quicker, too. He put in a lot of work this offseason into his body, and it's just been showing.
Yeah, and I think we didn't mention this as a storyline, but it's going to be like pretty much the bonus versus Turner a lot of the year, and I'm sure the Pacers fan base is going to divide at certain points of being like, who should see more minutes, who should play more, who should start. Sabonis has been a guy. I think he was a breakout pick in our breakout player series for OTG, so check that out, too. For me, I'm going to go with another young big, Zach Collins, like I mentioned earlier. I like what I saw from him in game one. I know at the end of late last season, he kind of picked it up. And if he can pick it up and give them more of a versatile big to put in there with Dame and CJ, I think it'll help the Blazers a lot.
Yeah, they need someone else alongside those two guards to step up. And maybe it is Collins. He definitely took a stride in his body. He's a little bit bigger. I know they've been really high on him over in Portland, so I like that pick as well.
Who else you got for me, Corey?
Jason Tatum.
Yeah, he's on my list too.
Through two games, he's been big time. Obviously, the three-point percentage hasn't been great, but 19.5 points, 9 rebounds. That first game against Philly, he just looked locked in. He looked like a guy who was trying to prove a point of like, you really picked this bum Fultz over me. he took Embiid to school numerous times. He's overflowing with confidence. And unlike last year in the playoffs, where I didn't think he knew how good he was, so far this year I feel like he knows that he is a top flight offensive player in this league already at just the age of 20.
Yeah, I think that work with Kobe Bryant, you can tell, kind of infused confidence with him. I even see him chirping with the refs a little bit more this year too, just knowing like he's a good player and he needs to get the calls. And like you said, three-point percentage isn't looking great, but I saw him hit like a step back off 1 foot from three yesterday against Toronto, and that was just disgusting. Obviously that's going to be a big season for Boston and Tatum. I think Kawhi Leonard's another guy talking Atlantic Division who's looked pretty good coming back. You know, he's going to be a guy that really dominates. He missed a few layups, but I think he's really impressed in terms of his like athleticism, not really losing a step or anything coming back from the injury.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. Obviously, I only saw one game of him, but DeAndre Ayton also looked really good in his first game. You know, he had 18 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists.
Yeah.
And I think the pairing of him and Devin Booker could be big time. I mean, we often know that, at least in the past, that a guard and a big man combo have worked out. You know, Kobe and Shaq, you know, Wade and Shaq. Having a guard who is an electrifying scorer with the center who can do a little bit of everything, it seems to work out. And I think DeAndre Ayton could be that guy. Obviously, I only saw one game of him, so it needs to continue. But I was really impressed with him after one night.
Yeah, no, definitely. He's a guy to just keep an eye on. And then just a couple more names throw out there. My guy Jared Allen, Nicole Mirotic, Joe Ingles, Jetty Osman, you know, Boban. Like, these guys have all looked pretty good in the few games we've already seen from this year. Anybody else to stick out real quick?
Ingles definitely stands out. You named a lot of the guys I would have just named.
Yeah, and obviously there's even more guys. Like, I haven't been able to catch every NBA game yet.
Yeah.
Still trying to get in rhythm. So if we missed anybody, feel free to shoot us a tweet at OTG Basketball. Anybody's really kind of disappointed you and been like, wow.
I mean, I've been disappointed with Karl Anthony Towns, but as we kind of spoke off air, it's more so the Timberwolves' usage of him and just everything going on there. But I'm certainly not happy with how unassertive he has looked through two games.
Yeah, I mean, that's a concern. And like we talked about, it's kind of like how much is it on the Timberwolves, that whole Jimmy Butler situation. It's almost like, would Cat be better off getting out of Minnesota? Obviously, they would really never trade him, but it just feels like something's not right there. He did have a disgusting block last night. He pinned the ball, got the pass out. So we'll kind of see how that progresses throughout the rest of the season. I think Kevin Love, we talked about a little bit earlier, hasn't necessarily been great or looking like that number one option.
No, I mean, Kevin Love shooting 29% from the field, 36% from three, not good numbers. If you look at the 23 points per game to 13 rebounds per game, you think that's pretty good, and you realize how many shots he's taking in order to get those numbers, and you know, you cringe. So yeah, I think he's also been a problem so far.
Any hot takes on the season you want to mention before we get out of here, Corey?
Oh man, hot takes already. I think I can almost say with a lot of guarantee that if the Bucks play with this floor spacing they've had through two games, that is the third seed in the East, and maybe a team that can honestly give the Celtics or Toronto a run for their money. I don't think there's a lot of teams in the East that can actually compete with Toronto and Boston. I think the Sixers are missing too much shooting in order to compete. But I think if the Bucks get the spacing right, they play the solid defense they have, and they hit their shot, I think they're probably the closest team that can compete.
Yeah, I like Philly or Milwaukee to make a move for Kyle Korver. Makes sense on both ends for, you know, both teams. I think I'll go with a West hot take, and that's just on buying a lot of stock into the Pelicans. I know it's two games, but I really liked everything I've seen from them, and I just feel like they're going to be a problem with that trio of bigs like I mentioned before.
For sure.
But that wraps it up for today. You know, check out the NBA Light on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, YouTube. And as well, make sure you're checking out the site, OTG Basketball, the rest of the podcast we got out there. A ton of content's been dropping all week, and it'll continue to drop the rest of the NBA season.
Peace out, knuckleheads.